I'm Dave Nordman, the executive editor of the Telegram Gazette, joined on this Voice of Business by Tim Murray, CEO and president of the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Dave, and want to thank Fidelity Bank for sponsoring the Voice of Business. Good to be back with you. We've got a little hiatus.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it seems like just yesterday, but so much has happened. At the forefront or like right in front of us is the recent mask mandate, which obviously started indoor mask mandate on Monday. It's a big deal, to a lot of people, but, kind of walk us through it, from what you're hearing from the Worcester business community.
Yeah. Well, I think the city manager did give us a little heads up, before it went live on Friday and, gave our input and certainly, we know that this is going to impact certain sectors more than others. Certainly, gyms and restaurants and some venues are going to be hit by this. I think the rationale behind this has been articulated by the manager and the mayor, but also by Eric Dixon, the president and CEO of UMass Memorial, who's talked about their ICU being overrun with COVID cases. In most cases, most of those people have not been vaccinated. And that is unfortunate because that seems to be driving a lot of this.
Yeah, and just to interrupt there, I listening to the mayor's talk within the press conference last week, he was quick to point out, in kind of quote unquote cases vaccinated. And Dr. Dixon, those at UMass in the city have made that clear about the efforts that they've gone through to make sure that people get vaccinated.
That's right. And, we can't afford a shutdown. And that's part of my explanation to several of our members who, voiced their frustration is that, look, we need to do everything we can to avoid a shutdown. Masks are obviously an inconvenience, but it's, it is proven to be helpful in mitigating the spread. And we need to be, embracing those as best we can and adapting and utilizing them as best we can to make sure we're limiting the spread and the impact on our hospitals. And it's not only the people who are sick going to the hospital. So, for example, if an emergency department is overrun with COVID cases, well, if someone has a heart attack, someone breaks a leg, whatever it is, those people, there's a cumulative, never mind the people working in the hospitals, the stress on them over time. So we've got to try to think of all these things. And the best thing people can do is get vaccinated. And we're seeing a number of venues now not letting people only in who can demonstrate that they're vaccinated. And I think you're going to see increasingly groups and organizations and businesses do that.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point. So not only are businesses requiring vaccination for entry. I mean, I went to a Holy Cross football game and you had to be vaccinated to go to the game, for example. But also, certain businesses are requiring vaccination from their employees. So, people are taking great steps to help fix a huge problem.
Yeah, no, that's it. So it's obviously an inconvenience. I think we've got to, again, try to listen to best recommendations from our healthcare professionals. And really, the understanding is this is to try to mitigate as best as possible the spread and the effect on the hospital system.
Yeah, I mean, it's because a business owner, comes to you and says, well, like we can't have masks in the alternative down the road is, your business is closed because we have to have another shutdown.
Right, right.
So
neither of which are, one is obviously a much more difficult scenario than the other.
Yeah. So, changing gears, and it's a subject that the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce has been on the forefront of every year about this time. And that's, unlike masks, this is something that comes up every year, which is the dual tax rate in the city of Worcester. Explain the subject for maybe I'm moving to Worcester for the first time, Tim. I just moved from some other part of the country. Explain to our readers how the dual tax rate works in Worcester, and then we can move on to what your argument is.
So 351 cities and towns in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, a small percentage of them tax owners of property whether you own a residential piece of property or a commercial industrial piece of property, the vast majority of municipalities tax them at the same rate. So you're taxed at a certain number of dollars per thousand. There are a number of, you know, a handful of communities out of that 351 that have a dual tax rate. They charge the residential one rate, and they charge the commercial industrial another rate. And what we have seen is that policy reverse itself. That was a lot. Cities and towns were allowed to create a dual rate back in the 80s. That was something the city council did at the time. And now we're taxing rates at substantially higher than we are businesses. And our argument, and there are lots of tangible examples, is that has had a negative effect in growing the commercial industrial tax rate. In fact, it shrunk. And when it shrinks, who bears the burden? Who picks up for that? And that is the residential side. And what the council has been urging over time is to slowly narrow the rate. We made some progress for several years. Then with some of the changing dynamics on the council, for the last 5 years, the council has increased the rates, and Massachusetts now, in Massachusetts, as recently reported by Mass Live, we have the sixth highest tax rate in the state. And so that, you know, is not a moniker we want. It's not one that's necessarily conducive to growth. And where we do see projects go forward, it's oftentimes with a TIF, which is basically foregoing taxes. Now, that's great in those instances for the bigger companies that can use it. But the vast majority of businesses in the city are small businesses that cannot take advantage of a TIF. And the other thing that listeners, you know, may not be aware of is that businesses are taxed twice. They're taxed on their property, but also their personal property that's in their business. That could be equipment that they have. And some businesses are more intensive with equipment than others. And then the other element, you know, of this is that even if a business is renting a piece of property, they have a triple net lease. So basically the landlord is passing on the taxes, real estate taxes and things into the net and into the lease. So Alex Guardiola, our Vice President of Government Affairs and Public Policy, wrote a column in the Sunday Telegram. And, you know, to begin the conversation, it's that time of year again. But also, you know, with a city council election coming up, we're also trying to make sure that, you know, those candidates, now that the preliminary is over, are aware of our position on this and how, while maybe not always an politically expedient position, it is the right position to try to narrow the rate or create a more competitive rate if we want to grow the commercial industrial tax rate.
Yeah, and talk about, you know, and Worcester's not alone. There are other communities that have dual tax rates, but talk about some other communities, and I'm sure you can quote some examples that have either gone from a dual tax rate to a single tax rate, or have at least narrowed the gap. So, like, where should Worcester be, in your opinion, compared to some of these other towns?
Well, I mean, you know, people sometimes say, well, we should look at gateway cities. Well, look at a gateway city here in Worcester County. Fitchburg has moved to a single rate. We see Clinton, it's not a gateway city, but another community that had a dual rate is moving towards a single rate. Webster already moved to a single rate after a series of years and steps closing the rate. We also see Auburn over the last 12, 13 years slowly moving towards a single rate. And I just want, you know, people to think, you know, there are some businesses, many businesses have choices where they can locate. And, you know, in Worcester, we're talking about a $35 per thousand tax rate, where in some of the communities just that abut Worcester, it's $12, $15 per thousand. And so that is a material difference in terms of budgets and costs that businesses evaluate. It's not the sole reason, but it is a significant reason. And that's what we try to make sure the councilors understand. And we've seen some companies that we've lost because of the tax rate, whether it be Prime Metals, used to be Morgan Construction, you know, that moved out. We see, you know, Cogmetics, Coffin Companies, you know, moving out to West Boylston. Curtis Industries also moved out to West Boylston. Allegro moved to, you know, Marlboro. So it does have an impact. Yes, there's a lot of new development and things happening, much of it in the residential side, but we want to make sure we keep those commercial industrial jobs, and that's make sure we've got facilities.
Yeah, I mean, in cities and towns that have lower commercial tax rates. They probably, I mean, in your opinion, have they seen, you know, that they've lowered the tax rate for commercial? Have they seen improvements? Have they seen, you know, companies either stay or relocate? I mean, I'm sure there are examples. You've mentioned a few.
Yeah, no, you know, without a doubt. I mean, and that's again one of the challenges, and it's not something you can necessarily put on a bumper sticker, but there's some cases where companies would prefer to stay in Worcester, and maybe would be willing to pay a little bit more to stay in Worcester, but there aren't pad ready modern commercial industrial sites. Because the owners of those properties, where's the incentive for them to build a new facility or modify or rehab a facility so that if a company's looking for modern commercial industrial space, they can move quickly? In most instances in Worcester over the years, a developer will only build a new modern facility if they've got a lease in hand. And we saw with the Prime Metals situation, and as a regional chamber of commerce, Dave, let me say, you know, we're pleased that they stayed in central Massachusetts and in our chamber service region. But for Worcester, we didn't have a pad-ready site for them. And part of the reason is, where's the incentive for a developer of an owner property to go and build a pad-ready site or a building when they're going to be paying $35 per thousand on a piece of property that will go up in value because they've improved it? So there's it's a double-edged sword. You know, not only is it on the tax bill, but it also is a disincentive for owners to kind of create buildings or pad-ready sites so that when a business is willing wants to move, and when they make a decision to move, you know, they want to move quickly. They don't want to wait 12 or 18 months. They want to move quickly because time is money.
Right. And you look at, and Worcester is by no means the city with the highest commercial tax rate, but you look at some of the cities with even higher tax rates and the struggles they've had. And I'll point out like a Holyoke, for example, with $40 per thousand. I mean, it's no secret that the higher your tax, it's just, it limits who you can bring to town.
No, without a doubt. And you know, again, where we were able to create pad ready sites, let's take Table Talk and their facility, the first facility in South Worcester.
Sure.
We worked over a series of years, I think back when I was mayor, as lieutenant governor, working with then Senator Augustus, Congressman McGovern, the city. We were able to create a pad-ready site, but it took a significant amount of public investment to clean up a brownfields, you know, tear down the buildings, clean it up, and then have it ready in for the time when a company's willing to expand. We've got to do more of that, without a doubt, in the city. But a factor in that, absent having public sector dollars to go in and clean up and get it ready, the other way to do that is making it more an incentive for the private owner to do that, and that's where the tax rate is an impediment.
Yeah, I mean, and you make a good point that I haven't often heard is, I think people just look at it as, well, if the commercial tax rate goes down, then the residential tax rate goes up, but maybe if the commercial tax rate comes down, maybe you offer fewer TIFs, or you have to offer fewer TIFs.
That's absolutely true. And then the other piece of this is, let's use the Morgan Construction Prime
sure.
Metals. Over on Crescent Street, right off of Lincoln Street, 300 jobs, a couple of shifts. You know, those people coming and going from work every day were stopping at the pizza, you know, shop on Lincoln Street, stopping at Salt and Pepper maybe for breakfast before or after, the dry cleaner, the hardware store. Those 300 employees aren't coming and going up and down the Lincoln Street, Burncoat, you know, Greendale corridor anymore. They are traveling out to Sutton. As new employees come in and think about becoming homeowners and investing in property, are they going to look in Worcester, or are they going to be, you know, looking at the Blackstone Valley? Again, as a regional chamber, we want the jobs to stay in the region. But from a Worcester public policy and economic development point of view, there's the also impact of losing those 300 good manufacturing jobs.
Yeah. So I guess your argument is clear. So how do you take this to, you mentioned the city council and the residents, to convince them that, you know, this is an investment worth making in your community and it's going to pay off in other ways rather than just saying my taxes might go up?
Well, I mean, for some, you know, there's pain involved in any of these decisions, and why we, and as we've done in Auburn, you know, we have our affiliate partner chamber, as we've done in Webster, as we're seeing take place in Clinton and Fitchburg, if we're able to move it slowly to, you know, close the gap. It's much less painful, and as properties turn over and things over time, it's less of an impact on the residential side. But we've been going the opposite way.
I was
the
just
last 5 years. We've been going the opposite way. The gap has grown over the last 5 years.
And I remember last year and the year before, it was either yourself or Alex, and we'd get together and we'd be talking about this, and then we'd get together a month later, and we're further apart than we were before.
Right, and that's, you know, the city council elections and new people have come on and they've taken a position on this, and it's ironic. You know, I heard one city council say, you know, that she's a business owner. Well, why doesn't she tell the voters where her business is located? It's not in the city of Worcester. So it's interesting, you know, in that regard. But let's look at some of the numbers. And Brian Allen, who's a real estate development professional, posted an article in response to Alex Guardiola's column that appeared in the Sunday Telegram. And he kind of just ran the numbers. You know, in the city of Worcester, the residential is $17 per thousand. Commercial industrial is $35 per thousand. But when you look at the city overall, and I think this can surprise people about what, when you look at the overall value of the properties in the city of Worcester, it's $11.73 billion is residential and $2.78 billion is the commercial industrial side. We want to be growing that commercial industrial side, because when you do, it takes the pressure off the residential side, because they are paying, you know, because the commercial industrial does pay more. So you want to have that pie, you know, growing as opposed to shrinking. And yes, there's been some good, you know, news in Worcester with a lot of the residential development and, you know, 2,000-3,000 new units coming on. But that's on the residential side. How do we create pad-ready sites? How do we incentivize commercial industrial businesses to grow and expand is got to be an important part of the conversation.
And at the end of the day, it comes down to a math problem, right? Because I look at the numbers a bunch of different ways, and I say, well, if you're charging more money, you may have fewer businesses, and then you charge more money, and then you're going to have even fewer. So you're charging fewer businesses, a lot more money. And your argument is, well, if we have more business in the city, we'll have to charge them less and then get the same amount of money in taxes in return.
And let's remember what they also provide. And perhaps maybe most importantly, they provide jobs.
Right.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's like, you know, everything we do at the Chamber is, but recruit, retain, incubate is all focused on jobs. And we want to try to create as many good paying jobs as close proximity to where people work and where they live as possible. And so, you know, jobs are important. And then the other piece, you know, who sponsors the Little Leagues? You know, who gives philanthropically to the schools? You know, who do we ask to step up and support so many things that are worthy of their support, whether it be the arts and cultural community? It's businesses oftentimes augmenting what the budgets that government can't do, or encouraging employees to go out and get involved. So, or to volunteer in the schools or in cleanups and in civic groups. So, you know, jobs are important as much as anything here.
Right. And I think, you know, I love the enthusiasm and the passion. I think if more people saw it as more just I don't want my taxes to go up. I'm dead set against it. And if they just heard all of these arguments, and you're out there, you know, you're out there explaining this to people. And I think that's a good thing for people to hear, you know. It's not just one thing. It's many different reasons, in your opinion, why.
No, it is. And look, I've been in the seat. It's on the city, seat in the city council taking this vote. I'm not saying it's an easy vote, but you've got to show the leadership to understand, you know, the overall, if you want economic development and jobs, you know, close by where people, you know, this is a piece of that. It's not always convenient. It's not always easy. But, you know, it is what it is, and we're out making the case on behalf of our members and the broader business community, because we believe jobs and good economic development policy are important.
Absolutely. So last thing I wanted to mention was, we talk about these things all the time, but business after hours, you've got a, you know, you've had a bunch of great ones. You've got another business after hours coming up talk about that.
And, yeah, that's right. We at the AC Marriott, and they're outdoor under the tent, so masks. We'll be outside, so masks.
The fireplace is going.
Yeah, we'll have it outside, so it's going to be this Thursday. It's a joint business after hours. The chamber has a mega business after hours with the Corridor 9 495 Chamber of Commerce at the AC Marriott from 5 to 7:30 outside. So great opportunity. We've had some super September weather with fall approaching, and great opportunity to network with chamber members and guests, meet new contacts, develop new leads, exchange ideas, and enjoy a great venue to the Worcester scene.
Yeah, AC Marriott, for those who haven't been there, just a great great hotel, great conference space, great outdoor space.
It is. And we're thrilled that Rockland Trust Bank is also supporting sponsoring this event.
Awesome. Well, that was a great conversation. Dual tax rates and masks mandates, and a little bit about some fun.
So, yes, absolutely.
So awesome. That's Tim Murray, CEO and President of the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm Dave Nordman, Executive Editor of the Telegram Gazette. Tim, we'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Dave.